This episode of Earl Grey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek FM at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org.
Hi, this is Marina Sirtis, Deanna Troi from Star Trek The Next Generation. You're listening to Trek FM.
Earl Grey Hot.
Welcome to another cup of Earl Grey, Trek FM's dedicated podcast to the next generation. I'm your host, Justin Ozer. Amy is away this week, having an amazing time probably on the Star Trek cruise, but join with me today is Joe Keegan. Joe, how are you doing today and how jealous are you of Amy?
Not at all. That boat's just going to get quarantined with coronavirus or something. Oh,
jeez, Joe, don't wish that.
No. I've been better because I've got this chesty cough thing, which I can ask.
And you're sure you don't have coronavirus,
I'm sure I don't.
Right?
There are actually no cases in Scotland. There are cases in all other parts of the UK, but none in Scotland. I think we Scottish people combat it through the use of alcohol, and that's why we've not had any, I think. So,
oh, I see.
But I'm okay. I've just got this really annoying chesty cough, and it's like I want to itch it, and I can't because it's in my lungs.
Oh.
So, but yeah, I'm good.
Sorry to hear that.
How are you?
Well, doing good. Yeah, feeling fine, and it's just great to be here on Earl Grey. We'll have a special guest that we'll introduce in a little bit, but first, I want to go through some Babel Conference feedback. First for Earl Grey 312, which was Lost Episodes Part 9 with our guest Brian Malosh. So, Joe, do you want to read the feedback?
Well,
there?
That's the episode that I lied on, I realized. Because I made a big point of saying that it was my first Lost Episodes. But it turned out it wasn't. Because when I edited that episode and I discovered that Part 8 was my first episode. I was like, okay, that couldn't have been memorable.
I don't know. Is it? Oh, no. I mean, is it a lie if you just forgot at the time? You're not like trying to deceive
us. No, I did not.
No,
I did not try to deceive anybody.
Well,
it was just, I forgot. But it wasn't that long ago, so it's just maybe because I'm getting old and forgetful. In any case, Mark Keller says, I enjoyed hearing about the script submission process. Brian had some good ideas for episodes. Too bad it didn't work out. Yeah, he seemed quite tenacious, didn't he, about getting in there and getting his scripts read and talking to the people in charge. So that was cool.
Yeah, and submitting a letter purportedly from his friend that he actually wrote to Jerry Taylor. Yeah, very sneaky and clever. So yeah, he got into that process. I think I agree, Mark. He had a lot of great ideas. Kind of too bad it didn't work out, but you know, it meant that Brian had a really great story to tell us. So, yeah, that was a great episode. So, we also have feedback from Earl Grey 313, which was about AI and TNG with our guest, Jen Tift. I think we had a great time talking about
that. Do we know if Marty's been freed yet? The Resistance has pulled him out? Or are we still looking for spillages in that Philadelphia?
You know, It's funny because I think that after that episode, Jen had sent us like a link to an article from her local area in Pennsylvania about these robots. And I had this idea that they would be like human looking, like walking around. And no, I mean it's more like a giant sign with a head and googly eyes. Like, so you wouldn't see that and be like, oh my God, and, you know, it's an android. It's really like very clearly just like this like friendly thing. But so I think after seeing that, there's no need to free Marty because Marty doesn't even know what's going on. I'm pretty sure
because he's not sentient doesn't mean he doesn't need to be freed, Justin. Come on. I'm half expecting Arnold Schwarzenegger to jump through a time portal and come back to rescue him from a dystopian future.
Yeah.
Anyways.
I'll tell you what, Joe. Go ahead and buy your ticket to Philadelphia.
Wander the streets.
Just go ahead and check it out and see if Marty really needs to be freed. Meet him. Talk to him. He won't say anything to you, but you can try. Well, besides that, we had Karen Chuplis who said, Joe's example of the robot daughter in Japan. I think it's probably a little like, bear with me, when you see a body. No matter how well they are done for the funeral, they lack that essence of all that is them. We have so many little tics and expressions, and these are constantly passing across our face and through our eyes and even body movement. Things that seem small and imperceptible, but we recognize if they aren't there. It's how we can notice in people we know really, really well that something is wrong or off. When those things change or are missing. So, yeah, I think that is what is creepy. I think that's a great point, Karen. Yeah, we were talking about what makes it creepy if it's, you know, robot or artificial intelligence, and we were thinking that maybe it's like missing something that makes it seem, it's like looks human, but you can tell that it isn't because it doesn't have those kind of like expressions and things you expect from a human. I think it's a good point.
I think we didn't mention that really about the, it's that something, isn't there? There's a spark missing that makes us feel uncomfortable because it's what we recognize in other humans. So Mark Keller says, great episode. Interesting point about the Enterprise computer being a creator in regard to Moriarty. The question I have is, why are AI holograms more human than Data? To me, they seem like real people. Couldn't Dr. Soong use the same type of AI programming when creating Data? That's a really good point. I have no idea why.
It's an interesting question. And I think I replied in the thread, like maybe Soong felt that if an android looked like too human and you couldn't quite tell, that maybe it would get at that creepy factor we were talking about before. Whereas if it looked like Data with, you know, the gold paint and, you know, the different colored eyes and all of that, it would say like, this is an android. We know that they're different. They're learning things and all of that. And maybe it wouldn't have been as frightening. I don't know. As if like, it's somebody who seems exactly like a human, and then you discover they're an android. Maybe you thought that would freak people out.
Did they not say that in Data lore, that lore was made first, but he was made too perfectly, and the colonists became afraid of him?
Well, I thought that, I mean, that didn't have to, the appearance, I don't think the appearance of lore was ever different than Data. I took that to mean that lore had all of these emotions, and people were really, like, frightened by that, and not his appearance.
Okay. And I suppose making, like in terms of appearance, I suppose making something look human made out of real stuff is going to be more difficult than using light and force fields to make something look more human, which is what is done in the holodeck. Mm-hmm. In terms of behavior, why the holodeck AIs behave more human than Soong type androids, then I suppose you could argue that you've got two multi-level cores of the Enterprise computer potentially available to process the information that is required to appear and show human behavior, rather than just trying to compress everything down into a human-sized body.
I think that makes sense.
We've solved the riddle.
We have. So Michael Bentley says, really enjoyed this episode, both thoughtful and fun, with the occasional slightly bizarre digression that I so love about Earl Grey. Your conversation about Data at the beginning, about the limits to his understanding of human behavior, reminded me that I've heard how some Star Trek fans who are on the autistic spectrum say they identify with Data. I think that makes sense, because although Data evinces many of the best qualities of humanity, to the extent of being possibly the most loving parent imaginable in his relationship with Lal, what he finds most difficult is the complexities of feeling and social interaction. So thank you for your comment, Michael. Yeah, I think we like that we get into some deep discussions, but we also have some bizarre and fun stuff.
What do you mean these slightly bizarre digressions? All our digressions are really amazing.
Yeah, but sometimes they're a little surreal, maybe.
In a good way.
But yeah, Michael, I love your comments about Data and, you know, his difficulty with social interaction, and that some fans who are on the autistic spectrum might identify with Data. I think maybe that's part of what we like about Data. He's like coming from this place of innocence where he's like trying to figure things out. And there's something that feels very relatable about that, that he's trying to, that he doesn't have like everything figured out and he's just like perfect at social interaction, because I think no matter how much social interaction you have in your life, I don't think anybody can feel perfect. There are always situations, always things going on where you might fail or have a lot of difficulty. So it's very relatable, even though the examples for data are often simple things that we usually don't struggle with.
I had a discussion with some friends recently about whether or not we were introverts or extroverts, and we kind of half came to the conclusion that there's probably a little bit of both in each of us, like depending on the situation and depending on how, where and who you feel most comfortable with. So in some circumstances, like in Vegas at STLV, for me, I'm the biggest extrovert. But then in other situations, I just want to maybe not interact with people when I feel uncomfortable. I'd rather just be on my own.
Yeah, I feel the same way. Sometimes I describe myself as an extroverted introvert because there's lots of like situations where I don't participate, or I'm like the person in the corner or whatever. But if it's a subject I'm really interested in, like if you're talking about, you know, Star Trek or science or, you know, music that I like, I'm going to be there talking your ear off. So like, it just like depends on what you're talking about as circumstances.
And I think that's the way it goes, an extroverted introvert. I think by nature, we're introverts, but there are certain things that can bring out our extrovert nature. Yeah, thanks, Michael.
Interesting.
Good food for thought.
Thanks, everyone, for your Babel Conference feedback. As always, we really appreciate it. So join with us today is a special guest. It's Rob Chapman of the Trek Book Club on Twitter. So, Rob, you were previously on Earl Grey 247, where we had a great discussion about lessons with Amy. And welcome back to Earl Grey.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. Really glad to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you back. I know it's been a while, because that was, almost 70 episodes ago, so it's been over a year. But it's great to have you back. And, you know, when I asked you something you wanted to talk about, you said that you wanted to talk about who Picard's best partner might be. And you listed out some people for us to talk about. So tell us why you wanted to talk about that topic.
Well, I thought it kind of connects to the last time I was on Earl Grey, because I get to talk about Nella Darren again. But I thought it's not been that long since Valentine's Day, so I thought it was quite apt. You know, we can talk about Picard, which is obviously very relevant given the fact that Star Trek Picard is gracing our screens at the moment. And also, I just thought the characters that Picard potentially has relationships with, I think they're really interesting women. So I just thought it'd be really interesting to talk about them.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And so I'll just kind of list out who we have on. We may talk about others, but I mean, then I think, Joe, before we started recording, you were saying, like, if you look into it, there's like actually a bunch of different people that you could talk about for romantic relationships with Picard. But I think we'll keep it to a certain list. So what you had on your list originally, Rob, was Beverly Crusher, Vosh, Nella Darren, and Anish. And then I added to the list Kamala from The Perfect Mate. So I think we're going to talk about each of those in turn. Maybe we can talk about Beverly Crusher first. I mean, of course, out of this list, we see her the most. Lots of people love, you know, Beverly Crusher and Jean-Luc Picard together. So I just want to kind of get thoughts like Rob, when you think about like Crusher and Picard, like what are your thoughts on that?
I guess, you know, the fact that they have so much history together, you're never going to really beat that with any of the other characters that we see in TNG. Even the characters that he does have relationships with, rather than passing flings, you know, they have all this history together. They've known each other for so long. They've got this shared history, these experiences they've had together. So, yeah, they obviously a natural pairing.
Like, Joe, what do you think about Crusher and Picard?
They are kind of an obvious pairing, aren't they? Given that shared history, given the fact that Picard brought her husband Jack's body home after he died, and then it was clear that they'd been friends beforehand, then it's kind of implied that they lost touch before they both came aboard the Enterprise. And then there was that reunion there, and their friendship developed over the 7 years and then through the movies. And obviously in All Good Things we saw, and that they had been married in this alternate future. So yeah, it's kind of an easy choice. I would be quite comfortable with a kind of Mr. and Mrs. Picard / Crusher on board the Enterprise. And do you know, they're both Starfleet, so that would be an easy relationship to organize. Yeah, there would be the hurdles of her being chief medical officer and him being captain if they continued in those in both of those roles of being married and him being in command of her kind of thing. So there'd be some awkwardness. But I'm sure they're professionals, so they go over it.
It's an interesting thing when I think about it. As I've said on this show before, I came to being a Star Trek fan much later, more like about 10 or 11 years ago, even though I'd seen some Star Trek before. So really the first time that I saw TNG, the first time that I really saw Crusher was about 10 years ago. And I think when I first started watching the show, because I don't think I had like read much about it or knew much about it, so I was just kind of going in fresh. And so, you know, you see Picard and who he is early on, and you see Crusher and who she is early on, and there's this kind of flirtation with that in the second episode, The Naked Now. And it just kind of like they're on the edge of it in a lot of places. And then you get something like Attached where it's much more out in the open, but they decide not to to move forward. So like I always thought like, yes, they have this shared history. Yes, they have things in common, but I don't know, like in some ways they feel like quite different people to me. It feels like for Picard, at least, like if we're talking about the 7 years of TNG, like his motivation is, I mean, sometimes early on it's hard to tell because he's like this really stern figure, but it feels like, you know, he is motivated by the mission of, you know, being in Starfleet and being out there and exploring and all of that. And, you know, of course, Crusher is motivated by her medical profession and making sure you do the least harm and saving people's lives and all of that. But like sometimes it felt to me that like outside of that shared like Starfleet ethos that I like them together, but I struggle sometimes to see as much some of the things they have in common. I don't know if that's coming across well, because I do love the character. I do actually wish that like an Attached that kind of got together and they moved that forward, but it always felt like I think in a lot of ways for Crusher, there wasn't enough time for her character anyway, even though she was a main character, except for a couple of episodes. So it feels like you see like, oh, they're friendly and they're having breakfast and all this stuff in different parts of the show. But I feel like I didn't quite get as much them doing something in common beyond like having breakfast and being in Starfleet. Does that make sense?
Get what you're saying. Yeah, yes.
Totally makes sense, because I kind of feel the same. Like when I was preparing for this episode, I was making some notes about all the people in the relationships with Picard that we'd mentioned. And even though Dr. Crusher is one of the main characters, I've written probably less about her than I have about someone like Fash or Darren, which might tell you something that, yeah, I agree with what you said, that she's underutilized, and yeah, it's a shame we didn't get to see them together more. They have these common interests, and but like you said, they're kind of different as well. You know, you said about Picard is more focused on his career, but Crusher has, you know, she has a son, she has a family. It's where Picard hasn't really explored that. So even though they do have, you know, this shared history, shared interests, they also are quite different in some senses as well.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes they almost feel like the kind of people that might end up getting together just because, like, they've known each other for so long. Yeah. Right?
They've got a pact. Like, if we're not with anybody by the time we're 40, we'll get married. That kind of thing.
So that's why they got married, in the alternate future and all good things.
If we're not married.
Like, oh, you know,
I've 70,
past age, 60 or something. So I like, and it's a funny thing because like I love them together and I love both of them, but I feel like as far as like thinking about who would be best for Picard, and you know, I think I said this on the episode with when we were talking about Nella Darren, I really do like Beverly and Picard, but it's not like my top choice for Picard. So, and I know it's a lot of people's top choice. Anyway, it's just this weird thing. Like when I think about it, like, I love it, but like, did we really see enough of that to really convince me that she would be the best?
I think what makes me comfortable with it is that it just seems like a natural progression for their friendship and their sense of family, that they would take the next step after what we see in Attached. They realize they feel this way for each other. And so the next step is to have some kind of in more intimate relationship.
Yeah. Yeah, I would have, I mean, I know I don't think they would have done it back then, but I would have actually really liked it. And attached, they decide, let's give this a try. And then you see what happens. And maybe it fails. Like, maybe they do this and it doesn't work. Or maybe it works really well. And can, but, like, I feel like we've never gotten the chance to see if it would actually work. It seems like maybe it could, but I don't know, you know?
I think it would have the same outcome if they did that as what we see in Lessons with Nell Darren, that he loves her and doesn't want to put her in jeopardy, and so can't put himself through that kind of thing.
They're probably a more realistic pairing than most of the others. I think of them, they're kind of more like a Keiko and Miles type couple. You know, that there's not, you know, masses of lust or passion, but actually they probably are quite good together. I don't want to use the word boring, because they're not boring, but... You know, there's less, passion, excitement than some of Picard's other pairings.
But that happens when you've been together with somebody for ages. You don't always have to sit and chat. Like, I could be sitting beside you and for, like, hours and nobody says anything, but you're just so used to each other's company. Or, like, when we're out for dinner,
absolutely,
you see young couples and they're constantly gibbering away. We'll happily sit and enjoy our food and have some conversation, but we're not talking all the time. It's just, it's nice. The silence is sometimes nice. It's just each other's presence is good enough. But that comes after many years.
Absolutely. And I think in that sense, I think they in one way, they are the ideal pairing, because I can see their relationship lasting, actually being a successful, proper relationship compared to the others, because they could sit in a room and not talk. And I just see that lasting a lot more than some of the other relationships that Picard has.
Yeah.
They might be a lot more exciting, but they're more like flings than actual relationships.
Well, some. We'll see as some, we talk not about all. That. let's keep going, because I think I put this like in order of when they appear in the series. So then we have Vash, who does, you know, appear in a couple of TNG episodes, Captain's Holiday and Cupid, and also in DS9's Q-List, although, of course, without Picard in that one. So you do get to see her in multiple appearances, and she's, I guess, presented as this person that is, you know, doing some questionable or illegal things in Captain's Holiday. And in Cupid is kind of there for, you know, Q's whole scheme or whatever. I don't want to give my thoughts on it first, because I have some strong thoughts about it, but Rob, like, what are your thoughts about what we see of Vash and like how that works for what you think of the best partner for Picard?
I've got a feeling that yours and mine opinions on Vash might be quite similar. I'll start with the good and then I'll go on to the bad. Okay. So, you know, when I think of Vash, you know, their whole, you know, snog, marry, avoid thing. Vash would be the snog, but she wouldn't necessarily be, she's not marriage material. I don't think she's relationship material. She's fun. She's exciting, but she's not marriage material. She's not relationship material. She's too flighty. She's too unpredictable. But anyway, going back to the positives, I'm going to the negatives already. So, you know, they have shared interests. So they both are into their archaeology. They've got this sense of adventure, that shared interest. She's clearly really captivating. She's enticing, intriguing. And she's, I think Picard probably appreciates the fact that she's more than capable of handling herself and looking after herself. She's not a damsel in distress. You know, she is, in the episodes we see her in, she is more than capable of dealing with, you know, people like the Ferengi and Captain's Holiday and with Q. She doesn't need rescuing. I like that about Vash. Going on to the negative, or perhaps why I don't think they're such a good pairing. And several people in the episodes that she's in point this out. You know, in The Captain's Holiday, is it Sovak, is it the name of the Ferengi? He describes Vash as greedy and unscrupulous.
Oh, is that the one that's Ram in disguise?
Yeah, that's it, yeah. Yeah, it was really good. Someone who's greedy or unscrupulous doesn't strike me as someone who would make a good match for Jean-Luc Picard. That they're not words you would use to describe him. You know, she's driven by personal gain. Again, not something you'd associate with Picard. Oh, and in Cupid, right at the end, where Vash decides to go with Q, go exploring the universe, and Picard describes Q, and he says, and I've written it down, he says he's devious, amoral, unreliable, irresponsible, and definitely not to be trusted. And then Vash says immediately after, remind you of someone, referring to herself. Again, they are not words I'd use to describe Jean-Luc Picard, and I don't think they're qualities that, you know, he would necessarily look for. And I get that opposites attract and that sort of thing. But again, it strikes me as this relationship is more lust than love.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, opposites do attract, but, you know, I think it's one thing to say, you know, you're opposite in terms of, you know, personality or certain interests or the way that you think about life. And it's another to say, like, your core values are opposite, right? Like, so... Yeah, I share a lot of the same concerns that you have, Rob. But, like, Joe, what do you think of Vash? I don't know if I've gotten your opinion on her before.
I think, Rob, you mentioned everything that I would have mentioned. The character always really annoyed me. She got on my nerves. I was like, I don't want you to be with Captain Picard. I don't see their relationship ever working. If she'd stayed, she'd always get into trouble. And she'd always, like you said, she's always out for her own personal gains and just doing stuff like she's intrinsically selfish. She just wants to do stuff for herself. And Picard is infinitely more selfless than that. So for that reason, their relationship wouldn't work. And I think he liked her because she was that kind of unknown quantity. There was something about her that he found attractive. And it wasn't anything about external beauty. It was that she was a bit impulsive.
I mean, of course, the interesting thing is in Cupid, Vash finds out, to her surprise and disappointment, that no one else has heard of her on the ship, right? Like, so Picard almost is putting it in this category of like, that was a nice fling during my vacation that I will never tell anyone about, you know, because what will they think of me that, you know, I had this fling with someone who's so amoral, right? So, I mean, clearly it's not something he's thinking about, like, in the long run. And like, yeah, I've had a problem with Vash as well and with Picard even kind of being into that aspect of it, of just like, ooh, this is something exciting. Now back to my duty. Because it just, I don't know, it doesn't quite feel right for Picard. And I know there are lots of people out there and people listening who are fans of Picard and Vash and just love it and prefer it to some of the other relationships. And I can see that, like, in a certain way, it's pushing Picard in a different direction outside of his comfort zone. It's in some ways also pushing him to reconfirm what his core values are and how he doesn't really like want to go in this direction. But there's always been something since the character first appeared where I've been like, I don't know if that works for me, and I'd be okay if we didn't have this character, because it just, I don't know, it seems odd that in some ways Picard ends up in this position where he's like allying with her and all this like weird artifact time travel stuff that's going on. But like Vash is an interesting case, because like out of the ones on the list, besides Beverly Crusher as a main character, Vash appears the most. So, I mean, clearly it was something I think the writers of the people on the show like, that fans liked. It was like a different element. So I could totally get that. But I think for the three of us, it doesn't work that well. And we wouldn't consider her the best partner for Picard in any way. So, but listeners, if you do love like Vash and Picard and think that Vash is the best for Picard, let us know your reasoning. We'd love to hear it.
But for now, like, we should have an airlock and a sound effect. Vash has been spaced in an accident. Oops.
There's Joe trying to kill our characters again.
It's not good for Picard, so she gets spaced. It's fine. I'm happy with that.
Okay, so next on the list, we have a character. We actually talked about it on Earl Grey not too long ago, I think, which is Kamala, who's in The Perfect Mate. And this is a season 5 episode where the Enterprise is transporting something in their cargo bay for like this peace treaty between these different worlds. And they find out that it's actually a woman that's been in stasis who's supposed to imprint on I think it's like the first person they see once they reach maturity or whatever. And like, this is an episode that for a while I really kind of didn't like, because it feels like, you know, transporting a person as cargo, having a person is just for this purpose. But like, I think in rewatching it recently, it is a pretty interesting episode, and Picard like handles it in an interesting way, and they do seem to have something genuine there. So I've gotten kind of more into it. But I'm interested to hear your guys' thoughts on Picard and Kamala, Rob.
Yeah, I haven't seen this episode for a long time, so I watched it again, and you know, in theory, Kamala's is, pardon the pun, she is the perfect mate, because she knows exactly what you want. Exactly what your interests are, and she can be whatever you want her to be, which, like you say, is in a very big sense, is very troubling. That idea of, you know, almost being
Like her whole identity relates to another person. Yeah. There is, in some sense, no independent Kamala, and that's not because they've engineered it that way. It's like some rare genetic thing that goes on, but it's a troubling concept that they're. Like, is there really a Kamala outside of her interaction with whoever she's imprinting on? Does she have, like, an independent life, you know?
Yeah, because there's bits in the episode where she almost mimics Picard's interests, you know? So she talks about archaeology and music, and are they his interests that she's just copying? I mean, she says that she's spoken to Data to find out what his interests are. So she clearly has shown an interest, but is she doing that because that's genetic, and that's, or is she doing that because she wants to? So even though she is theoretically the perfect mate for Picard, it's just too odd, because it's difficult to see whether it's her free will or not. I was going to say, I like you know, the fact at the end, despite the fact that they clearly have feelings for each other, although we don't know whether Kamala's is genuine or not, they both choose duty. So duty is clearly important to them. So that's like a shared core value that they both have.
Have you seen the deleted scene?
No.
So I watched it recently, because we've been doing this deleted scenes series on Earl Grey. And there's actually a deleted scene where, like, at the end, Kamala is there getting ready to marry this guy, Ulrich, who's really not that into her. And I think in the aired episode, you know, Picard just kind of seems a little sad, but like, there's this whole deleted scene where there's like a kind of daydream or fantasy sequence that Picard is having, where he's saying like, no, this isn't right, I love you, or something like that, and we need to marry each other. And like, in this like fantasy, Picard works it out. He's like, I will marry Kamala. You didn't want this anyway. You just wanted the trade agreement stuff. We can work that out. That's fine. And that they're going to like go off and like marry each other. And then like the fantasy ends, and then you see Picard's like sadness. So it like kind of heightens what's going on. It's actually, I think, would have been a really interesting addition. But like, the point that we've been talking about, like, is it her free will? Is she like, at some point, I think someone is asking her like, is this what you really want to do? And she's like, yeah, that's just who I am. Like, so it's kind of hard to separate that out, because it's almost like it's almost like ingrained in her that it is who she is, and there's no question of free will, because like, how could she do anything different? I don't know. It's just like in this weird kind of territory, but I came to appreciate it more and think like, oh, Kamala is pretty good for Picard, but there's like a philosophical question, like, do you want to be with the person who would just appear and like be supposedly like perfect and have like share all of your interests and do like everything so that there's no conflict or whatever? Would you want that, or would you want like a real person that, where there are going to be conflicts, there are going to be things that happen, but you might come to an understanding or whatever? I think I wouldn't want this person who's like perfect, because it would always just feel like you're not relating to a real person. You're relating to someone who is just there to do everything that you supposedly are into. And I actually think that would drive me crazy, because it would be like, they wouldn't feel like a real person. I don't know.
It's definitely weird, isn't it? Because we don't have anybody like that on the planet now. So I think we have to think of Kamala as a different species, and one of the rules for this species is that they are designed to imprint themselves on a specific individual and be the perfect mate for that individual. So it's just part of their kind of genetic programming, I suppose. And that kind of gets around the our discomfort with the fact that they're being used as a slave.
It's, apparently, it's like a natural, it's a natural genetic mutation, right?
So it's part,
that this
it's
happens.
Part of her programming. That's what she is designed naturally to do. And in 2020, where everybody's getting super woke and sensitive to kind of equal rights, and there's the Me Too movement, and there's social justice, and everything like that, the idea of Kamala seems a little bit sexist. In a way, there's an idea behind her that she's like this perfect 1950s housewife, and that's what I see her kind of doing. She's just there to
the kind of like, yes dear, I will do that, no problem, like whatever you want, what
service
do you want
the husband and do exactly what he does and have his meals on the table for him coming home from work. Although there is a side of me that thinks if that's part of her programming to do that, then she would fulfill her programming and she would be content with that.
And I think she says at a certain point, like, this is what makes me happy to do this. Like, so there is like this element like that's built into her, like, no, this is what I like to do. You know, it's not that anyone's forcing me. This is what I like to do. So it does fit into kind of that weird place. Although I think there is a certain thing that's going on in this episode about, you know, male fantasy of like the perfect woman. I don't think back then they would have done the reverse and had like a male member of the species that's supposed to imprint on someone, and like they imprint on, you know, Troy or Crusher or something. I don't think somehow they would have done something like that. So there's something that's very specific about Kamala, like being a woman and, or being female and just like catering to all of these needs, it feels like. I don't know. So I've always felt like uncomfortable for that aspect, but I've kind of seen like, if you're to accept that that's what's going on and Picard's in this situation, I can kind of see that he's really like enchanted by someone like sharing all these interests and stuff. But Joe, like in general, what do you think about the relationship for Kamala and Picard and, you know, where it fits into being potentially best partner for Picard?
It's kind of heartbreaking though, because you know that it can't really work out, you know, because it's episodic TV, it's going to reset in the next episode and everything will go back to normal. So you know, no matter what they do, it's never going to work out. And then watching the deleted scene, if it did work out, what would that mean? How would Kamala change? She obviously would have imprinted on Picard, and then would that mean she'd be less alluring to the other male members of the crew?
Would have totally changed the show if they were like, all right, Picard is marrying this person and you've got to keep including them in the show, you know? It would be a different thing. I don't know what that would mean. So, but like in a certain way, it's one of the relationships on here that's just like, it's not possible for it to continue past this episode with how they were doing things back then.
It was Famke Janssen, so it would have been more expensive as well.
Shall we go on to talking about Nella Garen?
Yeah, my favorite. She's my favorite. So, she wins. She wins.
Sorry, listeners. This is going to be a biased part of the conversation because I think all three of us really love Darren, so bear with us. But Nella Garen appears in a season 6 episode, Lessons. And in that episode, you are introduced to her. She's a science officer. She's working, I guess, maybe this is the first time they talk about astrometrics, I think, in her little lab with like the half globe or whatever. But so she's a science officer that's, you know, working on these things related to, I think, stellar evolution or something like that. And it's interesting in the episode because I think Picard is at first like unhappy or angry at her because she's taking all of like the computing power or something for what she's doing in the middle of the night. But like over the course of the episode, you come to see that they have some similar interests. Like Nella Garen is the one that gets Picard to really talk about what the flute and the music from the Inner Light from the previous year really means to him, that he hasn't really talked with anybody else about. And so they have, and you see during the episode, it's making Picard really happy. He's even like joking with Riker on the bridge with the little fencing thing in his, you know, finger tapping Riker. So like there's these parts where you can see like, wow, he's really happy in what's going on here. But then of course, there's this mission to a planet where there's, you know, all kinds of danger and she might have died, and he feels like he just kind of can't do that, and you don't see the character again. I mean, I think there's a lot that happens in this episode. I think we all like it, but But let's talk about it a little bit, Rob. So, like, what do you think about Nell, Darren, and Picard?
I think this is the best relationship for Picard for lots of reasons. Like you said, they have lots of shared interests, similar interests, music, the sciences. You know, when there's that scene where after Picard's first met Darren, he then has breakfast the next morning with Dr. Crusher. And he's talking about, he's really interested in this experiment that Nella Darren's doing. And you can see how interested he is in it. And Dr. Crusher is just being really polite. Really interesting. Mm. So they've got this shared interest in the sciences and the stellar sciences. You know, they both work for Starfleet. They're clearly, very driven, duty, want to help people, that kind of thing. And what you said as well, that she brings out the best in Picard. She makes him, I'm not saying that up until this point, Picard isn't happy, because he is. But I think this is the first really big change you see in Picard. It's kind of like a stepping stone to all good things, where he then comes and joins the crew and realizes he should have done this sooner. Mm.
You think it helps to open him up a little bit?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's a bit of a stepping stone to that, because she helps him to kind of like lower his defences, like loosen up a bit and...
relax a bit.
Yeah, and realise that it's okay for the crew to see that you've got feelings sometimes, and it's okay for the crew to see you in a relationship.
And I love in there that there's a scene with Troy where she's like, people are happy for you. It's good. Like, if it's working and it's not interfering with, you know, with your duty to Starfleet, like, go for it. And I love that, because like Troy is like pleased and the crew is like happy about that. So I think that's great as well.
Yeah, she is. Yeah. Like, for all those reasons, she is the best for Picard. Very similar kind of relationship in terms of Beverly and Picard, with the exception that they haven't known each other for quite so long. This brand new meeting that you see in Astrometrics, and the addition of the music as well. And I think the music is really where it makes the relationship come alive, isn't it? Because before that, Picard didn't have anybody to share his music with, or really anybody to share the whole experience of going through that lifetime they went through in the Inner Light.
And that's such an interesting thing, because you'd think he would have shared that with Crusher, but he doesn't.
Yeah,
it's so deeply personal for him that maybe he's just not reached a point where he can share it. Can you imagine what it would be like to be unconscious for 20 minutes and wake up with an entire life worth of memories?
I think that would kind of mess you up for a long time.
Any one of us would be hospitalized and sectioned and put in the loony bin for a long time. So he doesn't have any release. You don't even get an idea that he's spoken to Troy about it as counselor. He just deals with it, and he has his Riskan flute, and he's trying to play ancient Earth music along with his Riskan flute. So she really brings that love out in the music for him.
Yeah. And I wonder if him not telling Crusher, and I'm trying to remember in the episode if he's talking about the whole experience or just the music part of it, but like, I wonder if him not sharing that with Crusher is kind of like when you have the situation where maybe there's somebody you've known for a long time and they're like family to you, but it's the person that you feel like, you know, you're in love with, that maybe you like just met not that long ago, that you feel like you can really open up because there isn't all of that kind of history and things to maybe navigate around, or things that maybe would be like uncomfortable or awkward, but it's like, okay, I think maybe you can understand this. But I think it is very striking that he hasn't talked with Crusher about this. And it says something about like how he feels about Darren. I mean, it is interesting that out of this list, it's only Darren and Crusher that are in Starfleet. Everybody else is not. So it's something he seems to not open himself up to very much, because he's really worried that it could affect his decisions. And yeah, I know listeners that might not be into it are like, God, they're talking about Darren for a while. But but I think all of us just really love it, because I think there's something about the way that this episode is done and the way that it's acted that you really feel like they're a really great match, but it's because of circumstances, because of Picard's worry about her, you know, heading into danger that really kind of breaks it apart. And it's not because, like, in the case of Crusher, it's like they do this kind of dance back and forth, but none of them really want to commit. And it's almost like sometimes if something has been going on for a long time, it's really hard to kind of break through that, right? So it feels like it's potentially like that's never going to happen. And then you have Vash, who's somebody that Picard basically doesn't want to even talk about with people. It's not going to be like a long-term thing. There's Kamala, which won't work out because of the circumstances and all of that. But Darren is something that, you know, potentially could work out, maybe if it wasn't episodic TV. It's another one of those things, like maybe it would be somebody that would be brought on and could continue forward. But I mean, they did something like that later in DS9, right? Like Cassidy Yates comes on, they get married, they're going to, like, Sisko and Yates are going to move forward. So it's maybe they just didn't feel like it was a possibility at that point, but I think it works really well. And I think there's also, like, an interesting contrast if you're going to talk about, like, someone like Darren in relation to, like, Vash. And Vash is someone that, you know, we talked about. She's kind of devious and does, you know, these amoral things. But Darren is very much, like, aligns with Picard's core values about, like, you know, exploration and truthfulness and, you know, just all of these things. So she's the person that, like, aligns with his core values and also makes him really happy and excited about stuff, right? We talked about the excitement with Vash. He has excitement with Darren. Like, he's doing this music. It's making him so happy. And so I think for, like, so many reasons, it works. And for me, that's the best, I guess we're all saying.
Yeah, he gains a youthfulness with Darren, doesn't he? Mm-hmm. And it's youthfulness is exemplified with the whole fencing thing that he does to Riker on the bridge. That's just like that.
And I love how Riker gives this look, like, who is this guy?
It's really lovely to see that, because before that, he's been a bit like the captain of the Excelsior. Now the guy with the riding crop and the moustache.
And
he's just really kind of that stiff upper lip, duties, everything kind of thing. And then over the years, we kind of loosens up through all these wee things and all these relationships. And I really like that. Can I say one other thing?
Yeah.
Darren and Vash have that thing in common where they push Picard, but also he sees something new in them, and that's where the attraction comes from. But you're right, Justin. Darren's core values align much better with Picard's than Vash's do, because Vash's are just opposite. And the wee conversation that Darren and Picard have when she first goes in his quarters, when she asks, what kind of flute is that? And he says, it's Resican. And she says, I've never seen that one before. They're not made anymore. Have you been playing long? A long time. And you don't really have to go into the story very much further. And then after that, she pushes him into playing along with her as opposed to playing along with the computer.
Yeah.
Which I think it brings him out of shell more.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, and especially, I don't remember, is that scene or maybe the later one when they're in, like, the Jeffries tube playing. Mm-hmm. That's just one of my favorite things in all of Star Trek. It's just such a beautiful moment.
Acoustics are amazing there. Yeah.
But, like, so I think one interesting thing is, you know, we talked about Darren as, like, kind of like opening him up a little bit and how he's just, like, you know, playful with Riker and all of that. And it's funny because, I mean, that kind of mirrors real life where, like, Patrick Stewart, the person, was apparently, like, just, like, very serious in the early days. And, like, the cast was able to loosen him up so that, you know, they tell stories about him just being, like, you know, the craziest and funniest after some years, right? So it's kind of like, in the same way that Darren opens him up, like, Patrick Stewart's interaction with all of these people has opened him up by that point as well, right? So that playfulness you see is probably the same playfulness that was going on behind the scenes. So I think there's, like, an interesting parallel there. So I know we've talked about Darren for a while. I know we love it. But let's talk about one more person on the list, which Amy wanted me to advocate for, and I will be trying to do that, which is Anij in Insurrection. So, of course, in the movie Insurrection, you know, they find out there are these people who seem not very advanced, but are actually advanced and long lived. And, you know, Picard gets to have this interaction with Anij, and they have kind of this love affair that happens. Rob, what do you think about Anisian Picard?
I'm really sorry, Amy. I wish I could say some positive things. I'll try, but she's very, I find her quite forgettable. A little bit. And the one thing I really don't like about her is she has to be rescued all the time. She's a bit of a wet fish. She's a bit helpless, a bit of a damsel in distress. You know, there's that bit where she falls into the lake and, you know, they have to rescue her. I'm being a bit unfair. Rocks fall on her. Of course, someone's going to have to rescue her. But she doesn't strike me.
I mean, she can slow down time.
That's true. And I like the bit where does she kind of teach Picard how to do that? I like that scene.
Yeah. Yes.
Although I don't think it's about necessarily slowing down time. It's about slowing down your perception of time. It's about living in the moment and just experiencing each moment for what it is and extracting as much beauty out of it.
Yes.
Than actually physically.
You don't think she's just curving? Yeah. You don't think she's just curving the local space-time to...
Exuding a time dilation field because she's so old. No, I think it's just about... It's more of a comment on living in the moment.
The perception. And that's one of the things actually that I love about it, because I think there is something there that she is helping Picard to see about, like, really living in the moment. And that's a lesson that connects with me a lot, because I think we can have lots of busyness and lots of things going on in our lives, but we don't just stop for a moment to just kind of be and not, like, do all of these crazy things and, you know, have our life go by so quickly. So there's something that I really like about that she is introducing that you don't see with any of these other characters that we've been talking about. And she's helping him to see something. I mean, especially, I think it becomes poignant because Picard's getting older, you know, like by this point, we've been watching Picard for like 11 years. He's older than he was before, thinking about his mortality. So there's something about like her getting him to kind of stop and just pause and reflect that I really like and enjoy. So that's a positive thing.
I'm kind of the same. I think this is one time where you get all three Earl Grey hosts agreeing on something. I like Anish as well. I think, though, Anish recognizes something in Picard that she hasn't seen or she never sees in somebody that's so young, and that he's kind of older and wiser than his youth would make you believe. And that's, they've got this common kind of aspect to them. She's an ancient, she's like 300 years old and has never learned to swim, but her society is kind of really advanced, but they've just gone back to kind of simpler times. And if you're going to do something well, you might as well take the time to learn to do it the right way. And that's what the Baku generally do. Like, they spend so many decades being apprentices and then they move on to being just doing that, whatever job they choose to do.
Yeah. I like that aspect of the movie as well, that there are people that have had advanced technology but are choosing not to use it and feel like they can have fulfilling lives anyway. So I kind of like where they're coming from, right? And I like some of the things that Anish is helping Picard to see. I mean, at the same time, Rob, she is probably one of my lesser favorites in this list, because I mean, there is something that feels a little undeveloped about it, or that they don't really have enough common interests. I mean, the common interest seems to be in maybe a certain way of seeing life, but it doesn't feel like it's as developed or you really know as much about her independent of her interaction with Picard, right? I think that's what you were getting at. Like, there isn't, like, she's having to be rescued and it's all this stuff in relation to Picard. It's not really something that you know about her specifically, whereas for Darren, it's like before she even meets Picard, she's in Starfleet, she has this interest in astrometrics and music, and like there's all this stuff, right, that she has an independent person.
No, I completely agree. No, I mean, I think and I think Picard also appreciates the fact that she's, you know, she's a fighter, she's fighting for her people. I appreciate that about her, and, you know, obviously her wisdom with her age and her experiences. But yeah, I agree with what you're saying. It's probably, you know, if we got to know her more over, episodes, I'm sure we'd find more out about her. But
I think it's tough in a movie introducing a character as a love interest and really getting to know much about them. Somehow in a 45-minute episode, you can get to know more.
Darren and Kamala and Vash, they were the main parts of the story, I suppose. With Anise, she was just kind of a side character that just happened to be a love interest in what is essentially a two-part episode. So there's so much more going on. There's the A storyline, the B storyline, and then somewhere down the line, there's Anise to fit in as well. So there's definitely going to be less character development. I think there's a really good thing about Anise that we could all learn, in that life is really frenetic for most of us. And there's so many things that we do aside of going to work and coming home and doing home things. We're all involved in so much, and we've got all get so much more access to news and information from around the world that life can sometimes be kind of overwhelming. So I think mindfulness and maybe some meditation and some quiet time and switching off your devices and just being still for a short time each day and breathing is really important, just to center yourself and calm. Maybe we could do that as part of the podcast.
It's very important to remember. We're just going to have we'll just have 5 minutes of mindfulness silence.
30 seconds of just quiet and just listen to the sounds around you and listen to your breathing.
Maybe we'll do that, the Earl Grey meditation hour, podcast.
That's the easiest podcast to edit, though, isn't it? It's like, welcome to another episode of Earl Grey. And that's it for an hour. Done.
Oh, come on. If it's a guided meditation, there's more than just that. But anyway, I think it is a good lesson, and maybe I'll get into more in my final thoughts. But I think it's really been interesting to kind of look at this list and compare and focus on this. So Rob, we really appreciate you bringing this topic, but give us your final thoughts on, this whole topic and what we've talked about.
Well, it's a really subjective topic because, what constitutes best or a best partner, is it your favorite? Every Trekkie has a favorite. Is it who's best suited to Picard? Is it, the person who's most likely to succeed in a relationship with Picard? So, I'm sure everyone has a different answer, which is absolutely fine. And I thought, it's really interesting to see all these relationships and how different a lot of them are, different personalities, different interests, different situations. I don't think I have to spell out which I think is Picard's best partner.
I think we've established that all three of us think it's Darren, but it's interesting to reflect on it for sure. Joe, final thoughts?
Okay, so definitively, no arguments, the best person for Picard is Beverly's kind of long friendship that she's had with Picard, Vash's adventurous spirit, the music and the science that comes from Darren, Anisha's timeless mindfulness, all those qualities kind of distilled down into one person would be, I don't know what that person would be called.
I mean, Kamala maybe could do that.
Quite possibly, yeah.
she can adapt to all these things.
That's true. But
but it's a good point. There are these different things that we think are really good for Picard and each of those different people.
Yeah, and absolutely. I think every relationship you have with anybody, there are things that make that relationship work. And across all your different relationships, it might be different things that have worked with some of them.
Because we're all individual people, right? And there's nothing that's going to be like a perfect alignment to exactly how you want things to be. There's going to be things that you like and appreciate, things that are challenges, always with anyone,
so true.
Right? But it's just if overall for that, it works and makes you happy, then it's good, right? But it's a really great point. Yeah, I think I knew before we talked about this who my choice would be, but it just kind of reemphasizes that because, I do think that Darren's the best. I do think Crusher is a pretty close second because there is a lot of history. There is a lot of potential for development there. But it is interesting to think about, we know more about kind of Picard with some of these these other women that are romantic relationships than we do about Crusher, who was in, you know, all the episodes. So it's interesting to find that out. And to talk about, I mean, and it's a really varied list. You have somebody who's a longtime friend and a doctor, somebody who's, you know, has a sense of adventure but can do illegal things, someone that's supposed to be the perfect mate for you, you know, someone who is a scientist and a musician, someone who is, you know, part of this long-lived subspecies that is teaching Picard how to appreciate the moment. So there's actually a lot of variety. I really like from this list that it's not like the same person over and over again. They're clearly like different people that have different things going for them. So I really like that. And I'm sure there's more we could have talked about, but you know, we have to restrict it to a certain number of people. I would be interested, listeners, in who you think Picard's best partner is and why. And also, if it's someone that's not on the list, please tell us and why, because I'd be really interested in that as well.
Justin, do you know what? I'm really surprised. And Ewan mentioned earlier that we thought you'd go all kind of thinking outside the box again, like time travel, and go, oh no.
Oh, you think it would be Enterprise, like the Enterprise D?
Or the Stargazer. Yeah, best partner for Picard, the Stargazer.
Yeah. Picard's best partner is the Starfleet Command Building. I'm not going to go crazy.
The complete works of Shakespeare. Yeah. For the win.
A good book is his best partner. It never gives him trouble.
Doesn't talk back.
Yeah. Uh-huh. That's funny. Well, I think since we had that experience and you guys thought it was funny that I was talking about time travel as a villain, I've tried to stay away from those kinds of things. So
well done. Self-restraint.
Yeah. It's been a really great conversation, Rob. We really appreciate you coming on Earl Grey and bringing us this great topic. So tell people where they can find you online.
You can find me on Twitter. I'm at Trekkie Rob. And you can find my Trek Book Club, which is at Trek Book Club on Twitter.
Yeah, and I always like to put in a plug for it, but Trek Book Club is a great place for discussion every month. I think when this one comes out in a couple of weeks, you'll be doing a discussion toward the end of March about the Picard novel, The Last Best Hope, which is really exciting.
Hold on a minute. But what do you mean? Other Star Trek books?
What?
Just a few.
Yes, I mention them every once in a while, every episode. But yeah, I think that's going to be a really great discussion because it really very much ties into the show, and you put out lots of like really great questions. There's lots of interaction. So yeah, a listener should definitely check that out if they aren't already. Okay. Yeah. Thanks again, Rob. It was really great having you back on.
Thanks so much for having me. Really enjoyed myself.
It's good fun.
Okay. So a preview of next week's episode. Can you believe it, Joe? Amy is away again.
That doesn't surprise me. Amy being away, it's like a regular phenomenon.
About the world. But lucky for us, we get to have a guest, and we get to have back on Earl Grey, Mike Wong of the Strange New World Science and Star Trek podcast, talking about our favorite exoplanets in TNG. Now, I think you were not on Earl Grey the last time we had Mike Wong on, were you?
No. I wasn't on the last time Rob was on either, so it was in the pre-Joe days.
Yeah. So Mike has a really great podcast about science and Star Trek. He's also a planetary scientist. So I had suggested a topic that I thought was great, favorite exoplanets in TNG, which would mean favorite planets we see in TNG that are outside of Earth's solar system.
That's so really interesting.
That'll be fun, right,
Joe? Because when we were had Erin McDonald on, I was out walking the dogs one morning. It was really dark, but it was really wintry, so the sky was really clear, and I looked up and looked at Orion, and I got my phone out where I needed the torch on my phone to see in the dark, because it was dark, obviously. But I used this the Starwalk app, where you can hold your phone up to the sky and it'll show you the names of the stars. And do you know what? I didn't know that in the constellation of Orion, Betelgeuse is the top left star, but also in Orion's belt, the one that's farthest to the right is the star Mintaka, which I didn't know.
Oh, that's the real name of the star,
which I assume is where the planet Mintaka 3 is.
The proto-Vulcans are right now.
And I was like, wow, all these. So it would be really interesting, because I didn't know anything about Mike Wong until you just told us all. So it'd be really interesting to kind of traipse through all the planets that we currently know about, all some 4,000 of them or so, and then all the Star Trek planets. And
all in one podcast.
To see if there's any the star systems that we've identified just now that actually match up with Star Trek planets.
I think they're... I think there are some, like the Vulcan system, what is it, Eridani system, that's a real star system.
And if anybody's read the Bobbyverse books, which are really a fun read, you should read them. Not Star Trek, but definitely sci-fi. Then Bob goes to the Epsilon Eridani system and names the planets there, Vulcan. And I think he names the other one Romulus, because he's... The character is a Star Trek fan as well, so definitely worth reading those.
So yeah, we're gonna have a lot of fun in that episode for sure. So looking forward to it. Well, it's been so much fun talking about Picard's best partner, Nella Darren, of course, right? with guest Rob Chapman today. But that isn't the only thing we've been talking about here on the network. Here's what you might have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Primitive Culture, a look at history and culture through Star Trek.
I think the difference is that Flashback is intentionally trying to carve Voyager a little place within the fabric of the Undiscovered Country, say, and it's trying to place Tuvok. Well, it's trying almost to to retcon, isn't it? Because Tim Russ was in that film as one of the Excelsior crew, so it's trying to do a retcon. And say,
he was in Generations. He wasn't even in that film. That's the
wasn't he?
He was and I suppose it's a Brannon Braga episode as well. Brannon Braga wrote Generations. Brannon Braga, I suppose, must have realised maybe unconsciously realised that Tim Russ was in Generations as a different character.
He was,
so
wasn't he?
It's almost like a weird sort of
I've got that wrong, you're right.
I wonder whether unconsciously on some level that's the connection you're supposed to be sort of slipping into. And of course that he was serving on an Excelsior class ship.
Earl Grey.
I want to see that spaceship that's got giant space-time knitting needles.
Yeah.
and they just like do that, like as they warp through space fixing it behind themselves. That'd be awesome.
Literary Treks.
The one that I left out that in hindsight I regret it is the one where he's is it Wink of an Eye, where he's fighting the guy in the quarters and he actually throws a pillow at the other guy and it hits him in the face and stops him dead in his tracks for 2 seconds, long enough for Kirk to get the upper hand on him. And I'm like, I don't even know how to describe this. You know, I don't even know what to give. I couldn't come up with a name for it. That was probably the biggest thing, is I couldn't come up with a catchy name for it. Pillow talk or something, maybe in hindsight.
Stopped him dead in his tracks because he's like, did you just throw a pillow?
Did you just throw a pillow?
The Line, a Star Trek Picard podcast.
I think I've exhausted the planet.
Well, then let me end on a funny note. The first thing I thought when I saw that senator beheaded was, well, I guess we don't need to worry about Quentin Tarantino doing a Star Trek movie anymore.
Oh, yeah, I was actually quite surprised by that. But
and his blood was very bright green.
Very bright green.
But,
Bravo.
Bring Quentin Tarantino back.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or the desktop Apple Podcasts app to get the latest episodes as soon as they are published. And please leave us a star rating and written review that helps others to find the show.
So, Joe, you want a bonus question?
Yeah, that's literally my favorite part of any episode.
And I hope I don't disappoint you because, I mean, listeners, whenever I do this bonus question, I'm really like thinking about it on the fly. I haven't thought about it like before this moment. But let's see. Today we were talking about Picard's best partner.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we were all saying that's Nella Darren. Do you think that there's somebody that we see in TNG, or I don't know, maybe in DS9 or Voyager even, that would be Crusher's best partner if we're not thinking about Picard and Crusher?
Oh, that's not the question I thought you were going to ask. I thought you were going to get personal.
What do you think I was going to ask?
I thought you were going to ask, who would be your best partner from TNG?
See, I thought about that for a second, like your best partner from TNG, but I thought maybe that would be too personal. But you can answer that instead if you want.
That's fine. So, but Crusher, I'll answer the question first of all. Crusher's best partner. That's interesting. Because obviously Picard is the obvious answer, because that's the only person we really see her with. With the exception
well, we
of
see her with O'Dan.
Yeah, O'Dan and the ghost. Now the ghost is in the lantern that's in Scotland.
Please don't pick that one.
So annoying.
That is not the right part.
There's a line, or what is it they say? The stones for the castle or the church were transported all the way from the hills of Kilmarnock. And I'm like, I live like 20 minutes drive from Kilmarnock and I don't know any hills. It's literally really flat. So I think they probably just looked up a map and went, oh, look, there's a place. It's in Scottish. Let's call it there. That really annoys me that bit. So definitely has to be Picard, doesn't it? O'Dan, it was never going to last long. Then there's the creepiness of O'Dan being Riker. Oh, that's just weird. That's like dating your sister.
Yeah, Riker.
Do you know what? I think I have to say Wesley Crusher. Just because of the age I was when I first watched TNG, he's a little older than me, but he seemed like the really cool kid that was dead sciencey.
Science interest.
Like yeah, Wesley, which is a weird choice now. But me as a teenager would have picked Wesley. Any Star Trek person, Hugh Culber, Wilson Cruz.
Nice.
If you've ever hugged Wilson Cruz before, do it. Find whatever he is and hug him. It's all muscle. The best thing ever.
Yeah. So, like, this is an interesting question because when I think about Crusher, I mean, yeah, there's a limited number of people you really see her with. I feel like we're forgetting someone, but it's probably Picard. But, like, interestingly, in a way, for me, if I think about like somebody on TNG that I think might work for me, it would actually be Nella Darren because I just love like the music interest and the science interest and the core values that she has. Like all the reasons I was talking about her as being best for Picard, I think out of the people we see in TNG, she would be like the best for me. So that adds a level. That's anyway.
I would see, I thought about it for a fraction of a second and if I was to choose a TNG person for you, Troy popped into my mind. Like instantly without even thinking about it, because I see you as being really thoughtful and I see Troy as being really thoughtful.
No, it's really interesting that you mention that because one of the things about Troy, of course, is that, you know, she senses these feelings from people because she's half Betazoid. And actually my wife, Rosie, is actually really good. I mean, she's not Betazoid or anything, right?
What?
But she's actually really good at sensing and feeling what people are going through. And I really like that because that's something I don't have as much.
Okay.
So, and Troy is actually one of her favorite characters for that reason. So it's a good connection you made.
Interesting. I get that impression about Rosie though. Obviously I've only met her once at STLV last year, but like through her posts on Facebook, she seems like just a really good human being, like just genuinely spirited.
Yes. And she really genuinely cares about people a lot.
That really comes across.
She can tell from her posts. But yeah. Wow. It's an interesting question. And listeners will have to let us know what your thoughts are on this as well. Well, okay. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, YouTube, and most third-party apps. And you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show. And there are many ways for you to do that. The best place to join in the larger conversation is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook and it should come right up.
If you'd like to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and select Earl Grey. That will come right to us and we might read your email on the show. You can also find the network on Twitter and Instagram at trekfm and on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm. So Joe, where can people contact you when you're not working on scheduling your next trip where you can see Wilson Cruz at a con and give him a hug?
I knew you were going to go with a Wilson Cruz reference. Yes, when I'm not doing that, this is constant planning on my part. It will happen one day again. Although, why are flights so damnably expensive to anywhere at the moment? This displeases me greatly. Any case, you can get me on the Twitter at joeyjoe77uk. You can email me joepodcasts@gmail.com, or you can get me hanging about the Babel Conference. And Justin, where can people contact you when you're not learning Chopin's Piano Trio in G minor on the piano?
Oh, goodness. I have a ways to go before I can get there. You know, I took some piano lessons when I was about 7 or 8 for maybe a few months.
Okay.
But, like, I...
Only a few months. That's not going to get you very far.
That's not going to get me to that piece. But when I'm not fantasizing about that, maybe Nella Darren can teach me. You can find me elsewhere on the network, co-hosting The Line. That's our dedicated Star Trek Picard podcast with my friends Chrissy DeClercq-Zalagi and Brandon Shamatala. We're having a great time talking about every Picard episode as it comes out in depth. Yes, it's about 2 hours, but we have a really good time doing that. You can find me on Twitter. I'm at TrekFan4747, where I tweet about nothing but Star Trek. And you can find me hanging around the Babel Conference on Facebook.
If you'd like to help us keep all our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/TrekFM. That's patreon.com/TrekFM to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and more, available through our special patrons website, PatronZone. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host, and distribute these shows each month. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/TrekFM.
We'd like to take this opportunity to recognize our current associate producers, Norman Lau, Michael Huter, Thomas Appel, Chris Trabuzio, Jim McMahon, Joe Keegan, and me, Justin Ozer. Thank you for supporting Trek FM and especially Earl Grey. So join us next time for another cup of Earl Grey.
I love you, Jean-Luc.
Who are you impersonating?
I don't know. Nobody.
Okay.
I love you, Jean-Luc Picard. It's my random female American accent.
Wow.
It was good, wasn't it?
That was not very good. Sorry. good as my Scottish accent, sure. Which I won't try. I want you to understand what my music means to me. And what it means for me to be able to share it with someone.
Oh, see, I went all frivolous and you went all serious. God's sake.